The following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. Welcome to Commodore Hour. Over the next 60 minutes, we'll break down the latest in Vanderbilt athletics and hear from players, coaches, and administrators. Commodore Hour is brought to you by Ascend Federal Credit Union, the exclusive credit union of Vanderbilt athletics. Regions, get the Vanderbilt University Visa check card from Regions. Visit regions.com/anchor down to order yours today. And by the Middle Tennessee Ford dealers. Now, here's your host, Kevin Ingram.
We say welcome to Commodore Hour on this rainy Monday night in Nashville. Great to have you with us. Fun hour coming up. We'll talk Vanderbilt. We'll have some terrific guests as well. Our guests include Vanderbilt head basketball coach Jerry Stackhouse. We'll have a couple segments with Stack coming up shortly. Also, women's tennis coach Aliki Subanos. We'll talk about the good start for the women's tennis program, off to a 3-0 start. And a little bit later on in the hour, former all-conference selection Ronnie McMahon will be our guest. Ronnie Mac could shoot the rock back in the 90s, so we'll catch up with Ronnie coming up a bit later on. A little check of the headlines for Vanderbilt, tell you what all's going on. Of course, congratulations to three former Commodores. Will be part of Super Bowl 55 in a couple weeks down in Tampa, including Keyshawn Vaughn of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They won at Green Bay, of course, yesterday, 31-26. Keyshawn, part of the Tampa Bay Bucs in his rookie season. Also, Shelton Quarles, the director of football ops for the Bucs, spent 10 years as a linebacker with Tampa Bay. And, of course, he was part of the Super Bowl win in Super Bowl 37 back in 2003. So he's headed back to the Super Bowl. He's been a part of both of the Buccaneer Super Bowl teams. And Kansas City's Emmanuel Smith heading back to the Super Bowl as well. He was part of the Chiefs championship squad last year. They beat Buffalo in the AFC championship game 38-24. Emmanuel's been injured, did play back in week 15, but Murfreesboro native. So congratulations to Emmanuel Smith, Keyshawn Vaughn, and Shelton Quarles. All will be in Tampa as part of the respective teams in Super Bowl 55. For men's basketball, 4-7 record. Still looking for that first SEC win after Saturday's loss to Arkansas, 92-71. 10-point game of the half. Turnovers led to points for the Razorbacks in the second half. Arkansas shot 57%, went 8 of 19 from 3. Vanderbilt was led by DJ Harvey with 16 points at 3 out of 6 from 3. Max Evans off the bench for 14 points and 5 boards. Scottie Pippen Jr. continues to have a good sophomore year. 15 points, 3 rebounds, and 5 assists. Stack's team will be at Florida on Wednesday, the rematch with the Gators. They were Vanderbilt's opening night opponent and to begin SEC play back at the end of December. That will be a 5:30 tip, 5 o'clock pregame, then Saturday at home against South Carolina. 7 o'clock pregame, 7:30 tip for Vanderbilt and Carolina. Women's tennis mentioned off to a good start this season, 3-0 with a 6-1 win over Memphis yesterday over the Curry Tennis Center. A nice day, 5-1 in singles, 2 out of 3 doubles matches. Vanderbilt won. The only loss was in a tiebreak by the top pair. Beat Western Kentucky to start the season, won at MTSU on Saturday, then beat Memphis yesterday. Next up will be Miami on Saturday at home. But a lot going on with the various sports getting cranked up to go with the men's basketball going on over on campus. And we will talk more men's hoops when we come back. Coach Jerry Stackhouse is going to join us in just a moment. Gupton Jeep is your Chrysler, Jeep, Dodge, and Ram headquarters, been serving Middle Tennessee for over 59 years. This is Commodore Hour, and this is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield IMG College. Welcome back. This is Commodore Hour. Great to have you with us as we talk Vanderbilt sports on this Monday night. Mention men's basketball back in action on Wednesday against the University of Florida down in Gainesville. And I had a chance to visit with head coach Jerry Stackhouse. Here's part one of my conversation with Stack. Joined by Coach Jerry Stackhouse. And, you know, after having a chance to digest the game on Saturday and maybe look at it again, you feel any differently than you did when it was going on?
No, not really. I mean, again, it's just a again, for us, just focusing in, got to start games off better. I mean, I think that's the key for us, to, you know, give ourselves confidence and to not let other teams, you know, gain a lot of confidence to start games. I think that's important for us, and not having those errors early on of things that we can control. You know, sometimes the guys just going to jump up and make a basket after you play good defense. And we had a couple of those in that game. And you know, those are the ones where you just shake your hand and say, okay, they made a better basketball play than we played, than we defended, or it's just a check score. Sure. But I think a lot of times when you look back and it's just things that we can control, and we just got to do it better. You know, we come back, focus, look at those things. You know, nothing changes with our approach. as far as, you know, watching the film, watching ourselves, seeing where we're making our mistakes, try to go out and improve on some things. We had probably more small screens than we've seen probably all year. So it was some good things there that I think could help us get better long term and dealing with those small screens. So, you know, there's always some positives to take out of some things. Obviously, at the end of battle, there's always, there's emotional times there. But when you're able to really go back and digest and look at everything, you can see where, man, there were some improvements. We got some, you know, some production out of some guys that we hadn't got production out of. So hopefully they're starting to turn the corner there. So some positives always, but we like to still, you know, hold accountability for the negative things so we can get better there too.
You talked about trying to get some players to stop making the same mistakes and effort things in general. What's the best approach to try to go about fixing some of that stuff?
I think it's just to continue to practice them, you know, continue to drill them, do those same things every day and get in positions to where, and some of it, maybe it's just like, you know, maybe foot speed, maybe that's just something, but I almost was like, all right, if I don't have the foot speed to really stop them, you know, and it's early in the game and we're trying to set it to them, I'd rather just foul them, you know, foul them, take his side out. You know, we got to be able to trust everybody on our bench. I just think for us too, it's just like playing harder. I mean, they don't know that playing extremely hard is a talent. And if, you know, things aren't really going the way, we're not shooting it as well as we want the ball, sometimes you go to the free throw line, guys that are 90% free throw shooters, sometimes it just doesn't feel right. And you're going to have, you know, ball handlers that doesn't feel right sometimes. They might have a little rash of turnovers. But one thing that you can control is just playing hard. And normally when you do those things, through my life of basketball, when you do that consistently and you get that consistent effort from your group, then good things tend to happen.
Max Evans and DJ Harvey, I thought both had nice games on Saturday. Was that a good sign for a couple of veteran guys who played a lot of basketball?
It was. And I think, you know, just to see them get a little bit of a rhythm, I think defensively, DJ was pretty good in the first half. You know, most of his mistakes came in the second half. So I think that those just got a nice little rhythm there offensively to see the ball go in the hole. I mean, again, we've said from the beginning that he's a guy that we need to play well, you know, especially when we were down, you know, Dylan, who, you know, by all accounts, our best all-around player, from what he brings to us from, you know, offensively and defensively. But just when you're trying to build some things and get guys' confidence up, I mean, it was a great opportunity to step up, you know, in the absence of Dylan, and like, wow, look what we could do without him. When he gets back, now we're really ready. So, but those are the things as a coach, the buttons that you want to try to push with guys to motivate them, to get them going.
For DJ, is it a matter of just playing some games, given that it had been so long since his last college game before he stepped back out there this season?
I think so. I think some of that. I mean, just the speed of the game and real time and difference of, like, conferences. You know, so maybe it's a different style. Maybe it's a little more free-flowing, a little more, freedom of movement in the ACC than it is in the SEC, where there's a little bit more, you know, bumping and, things that are allowed, you know, just you know, from this conference, just kind of the characteristics of this conference as I've seen, and you know, just with the athletes that we have, we're trying to really determine probably what's his best position. You know, yeah. I mean, I think, it might really be him sliding down to the four, and being able to have kind of a quickness advantage. I don't think it's been much of a quickness advantage for him to kind of beat guys off the dribble, at the wings. So I think those are some things that maybe we have to look at a little bit more and maybe create a little bit more room for more minutes for some perimeter guys that we want to have on the floor, like a Trey Thompson or Jordan Wright, kind of have some impactful minutes out there together.
It's pretty clear teams in the SEC are hoping to make Scotty work as much as possible to get his points, take as many shots to get there. Game by game, do you try to figure out what the happy medium is for him to be most effective?
Yeah, I mean, I think he, you know, he does a good job of, you know, of doing both, kind of playing off the ball, you know, and then now that we got, you know, Isaac back into the mix a little bit, I think we could, you know, really treat Trayvon more as a combo to where we can play him off the ball too, can play him and Scotty together. And then, I mean, it's just good when you can have, you know, ball handlers that you can swing the ball across the court and they have just kind of a natural feel for making plays and playing in pick and rolls. You know, we have guys that, you know, again, that can play a pick and roll, a Jordan Wright, a DJ Harvey, but those guys aren't our most efficient guys in the pick and rolls. When we can have, you know, our smaller guards that to be able to, you know, see and see the progressions and make reads, I think that bodes well for us. But Scotty's been, man, I mean, he played, you know, kind of lit into those guys, obviously, at halftime, and he came out, man. I mean, I'm just super proud of his effort. Did he make every right play or make every shot? But his effort allowed him to put his hands up and say, "Coach, I need a blow."
Yeah.
And that's what I want. You know, I think those are the things that help any teams that are struggling when you can get a consistent effort from the group to play as hard as he did in those minutes to start that second half. And again, we just got to get that, you know, consistently through our group. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's important to kind of watch games. I always tell, you know, watch other teams that, you know, maybe they wanted to perceived as the better teams in the country right now. Some of the top ranked teams, watch those teams, see anything that stands out with those teams. I mean, you got to be a student of the game. You got to watch it. And hopefully we can, you know, can take something and learn from that, you know, and even teams within our own conference. You know what I'm saying? Not just right before we play them. You know, watch around the league. You know, and see the styles, see different things. So it's not just okay right before we play them. Okay, we got to try to cram and understand what they do. I mean, I think we have a league that we understand as coaches. We kind of understand what you know, the sets are and different things to be prepared for, and hopefully we can get our guys to get more engaged in kind of the mental side of the game as well, and not only the physical.
Our guest is Coach Jerry Stackhouse. We'll have more coming up in just a moment. This is Commodore Hour from Learfield IMG.
Take us wherever you may go with the Game Nashville app.
Welcome back to Commodore Hour. Our guest is Vanderbilt head basketball coach Jerry Stackhouse. The Commodores on the road against Florida on Wednesday. Before we went to the break, you're talking about getting players to watch other teams and other games. How much do you do that as a coach and maybe get ideas for things like, hey, that might work for us. We might could run something like that. How much do you do that?
I mean, that's pretty much what the job entails.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Watching other teams and their last, you know, two or three games. Going back to our game when we played them, seeing things that worked, things that didn't work, just kind of. But you know, it's always it's good to watch the last game because there can always be personnel changes. Could be a guy that you played that played when you played 3 weeks ago that's not in the lineup now, and it could be somebody else that has emerged. But again, normally with these teams, they kind of have a style. They have an identity of what they're trying to do and what they're trying to get accomplished. And I think we have a really good feel of that, you know, from our scouts and have our guys prepared. Like I said, we do a lot of good things, you know, for stretches at the games. And it's just about, you know, doing those things a little bit longer. And as I alluded to before, just, you know, just doing things with a little bit more force.
Another shot at Florida this week. They're really athletic. They have terrific guards, good rebounding big guys. Castleton was terrific when we played him in the first meeting. But how important is it to try to slow down Trey Mann, who really seems to be the one that makes him go?
Yeah, I mean, I think Appleby. I mean, there's a lot of different names that you can call from these teams. I mean, guys that are capable. But, I mean, I thought we guarded those guys really well. Trey Mann, we forced him into some early turnovers. Mm-hmm. You know, Scotty really got into him. Trayvon did a good job of, you know, making it tougher on him. And then, you know, when he was able to kind of get some separation was when we were relaxed and we weren't really up in him. I think that we have to come with that pressure to try to, you know, make it not so easy for him to see plays and progression. He's already a big guard.
Yeah.
You know, and that can see, you know, action. So we got to make sure that he's concerned about his ball a little bit. So I think the importance of us harassing him and Appleby and making sure that we're aware that he's, you know, he's looking to attack. But at the same time, we have to be aggressive with those guys as well. We have ways that we can attack them. You know, Castleton got away from us a little bit, and just with some rotation, some mental errors just going back and watching. And I watched that as early last night again, and just like, man, I mean, it's nothing that we don't know how to do, man. Yeah. So it's just like this. Can we do it? And then, so we're going to come back. We're going to drill it. We're going to go over their sets, things that they like to do, try to focus on things that we can do that we've had success with against them. You know, really focus on some things that they did to hurt us last time. And hopefully we have a better outcome. I mean, that was wind up at the end of the score, you know, the 19, 20 point game, but you know, it was a 6-8 point game. There in the balance, and we just a bad offense led to some easy opportunities for them to get out in transition, get some separation, and then we were pressing a little bit. And at the same time, once you get a little separation, it gives you confidence offensively to play in a space that allows a little bit more freedom and confidence. So I mean, hopefully we can be the first team to that freedom and confidence and kind of see how that fares for us.
Hope to be a little closer to full strength, maybe have Dylan and Akeem back at least.
Yeah, having Dylan and Akeem back. So we're, you know, kind of look a little bit whole, still not whole. You know, we've been a pretty tough 14 days. You know, a lot has happened. You know, probably in that, probably the worst thing that's happened is losing Tyron for the whole season. And so prayers are for him to, you know, have a full recovery and be, you know, get back to being who we feel and who we see him to be for us going forward. But you know, it's just something good. I think I probably have taken for granted a little bit, you know, some of the issues that these kids are really dealing
sure.
with without
yeah.
focus. You know, I mean, we get locked into it, and then it's the practice and the games, and we feel like, but. You know, it's still things coming out about, you know, the effects and of you know, COVID, and you know, not just from a mental standpoint, but the physical challenges that we don't even really fully know about. So it's, I think I got to push them, and I want to hold them accountable, but you know, at the same time, I got to realize that okay, they could be dealing with a little bit more than what they're letting on, or when we talk about toughness and we're talking about manning up, we could let some things slip through the cracks. So I got to be better there. I will be better there and being cognizant of that. But at the same time, I got to push them. I got to push them and try to hope that we can, you know, turn the corner, man. We're here for a reason. We're here to try to get better. We're here to try to, you know, get this program back to where we feel that it can be. And I believe in these kids. I believe that they can do it, maybe more so than they believe in it themselves. But I've seen the power of teamwork. I've seen the power of discipline. And I think that's the two things that we gotta tighten up on, and it'll give us a real chance.
Do you feel like Educate took a step forward on Saturday, came off the bench and made some things happen?
He did, man. He really did. Edge had some good minutes for us. You know, he made some, you know, again, some defensive errors. I mean, he rebounded the ball. He had 7 rebounds. Did some things. You know, and that's the funny thing about, you know, this thing. You can sit here and ask me about Edge, and I can tell you, but in this world that we live in now, like I can tell you about all the good things that he did. But when I tell you about he had 7 defensive mistakes, that nobody wants to hear that. You hired the wrong guy. I'm going to tell them when they do good. I'm going to pat them on the back when they do good. And when they do bad, I'm going to tell you about that too, or don't ask. So, but I think that's who we are. And that's, I mean, I think our kids understand that, you know, all the noise. We just got to crowd out the noise and just stick to what we're doing And knowing that our plan and our attack of how we're going about it is going to get us result if we stand steadfast in what we're trying to do. But to your question, yeah, Edge did some good minutes to the point to where, I'm contemplating possibly starting him, against Florida because he was our best big, in that game. But having Dylan back and just the problems that, he presents when he's at the five is always something that and it allows us to have more shooting on the floor. So that is something that I'm mulling over right now as far as the lineup for Wednesday.
All right, a couple fun ones to finish up here. As a guy who had a long career as a pro athlete, what do you appreciate about what Tom Brady is doing at age 43, getting to a 10th Super Bowl yesterday?
Unbelievable, man. Absolutely unbelievable. I mean, I got a Brady jersey, just so you know.
a Bucks or a Patriots jersey?
The Patriots. Okay. Patriots. I need a Bucks one. But no, I think it's a testament to his hard work and his understanding of the game. And, he could, it's just, ego could have made him, try to really throw for a first down. No, he threw that ball right at his feet, so he didn't get out of field goal position. And just those little things is what you kind of admire about him. I admire about him more as a coach right now, as opposed to, obviously still being able to make all the plays, being as long in the tooth as he is. That's fun too, but just his gamesmanship and his, just the chess match that he plays while the game is going on is really impressive.
All right, and one more. Today was the anniversary of the Jerome Lane dunk that broke the backboard for Pittsburgh back in the 80s. I think it was 88. I remember I was watching that game as a teenager. And that led to a countdown that I saw on ESPN, and right there at number 4 is your dunk against Duke at Cameron, I think in 95. Well, was that the favorite one for you of your career? Or were there a couple others maybe that you may have even liked even better?
Oh, man, I think that was definitely the one that has, because the rivalry is so big between North Carolina that I say that's the one time or two times a year I get to see myself with a little bit of hair. You know what I'm saying? Because I know they're gonna show that one in the promo. That's great company. I saw that Jerome Lang against Pittsburgh and all that. I mean, that was some fun times. But it's good to be mentioned up there. But I probably the Virginia Tech game, man. I had a dunk against Virginia Tech that was playing at the Greensboro Coliseum. That one still stands out to me as one of the favorites because I had 4 fouls and I still drove. The set play, I had it on the left wing, drove middle, and I just took off. So if it wasn't perfect timing, I probably could have possibly fouled out. But if you go back and find that one, Rashid's emotion, that's what a teammate's supposed to do when when his other teammate make a play like that. I mean, I think he was more excited than I was. It was definitely one of my most memorable.
I'm going to go look for it right now. Jerry, thanks so much for the time. Always a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
Appreciate you, Kev. Take care, bud.
That's Vanderbilt head basketball coach Jerry Stackhouse as the Commodores get ready to face Florida on Wednesday night. Again, 5:30 tip-off for the Commodores and the Gators. Coming up next, we're going to visit with women's tennis coach Aliki Sabanos. We'll talk about the great start for the women's tennis program as she makes her way through year one as head coach. Of course, long time as part of that program. Commodore Hour, by the way, brought to you in part by the Tennessee Lottery. The Tennessee Education Lottery is proud to have raised more than $5.5 billion to support education programs in Tennessee. Commodore Hour, returns in a moment. This is Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Commodore Hour continues on a Monday night in the Music City. Great to have you with us. I'm Kevin Ingram. Our next guest is a Vanderbilt Athletics Hall of Famer in her first season as head coach of the women's tennis program after 13 years as an assistant an associate head coach. She was a terrific player, of course, as well. Aliki Sabanos joins us. Coach, how you doing?
Hey, Kevin, I'm great. How are you?
Doing fine. You guys are off to a really good start in your season, 3-0. You beat Memphis yesterday 6-1 over the Curry Tennis Center. A nice day, went 5-1 in singles, won 2 out of 3 matches and doubles. What does all that tell you about the depth that you have?
Yeah, it was. It was a good match. We've had a couple good ones. We started with your alma mater last weekend. But we've had some good early matches. And really at this point in the season, I think it's just about as much volume as you can get to sort of prepare yourself for the rigors of what the SEC season will bring. So, you know, we were definitely pushed on some courts yesterday. It was a good match. Memphis came out. They were good in the doubles. We were able to pull that out, but they competed hard. And then I think we actually kind of jumped them a little bit in the singles and had some pretty big leads on courts and closed out some first sets. And to their credit, they regrouped and came at us a little bit in second sets and really put themselves in a position to they did split on court one and had some chances maybe to push us to third sets on some courts. And we were, I think, a little bit more experienced in a few positions and were able to pull those out. But it's just a nice few matches to kind of get under our belt and get back to competing again, because it feels like it's been so long since we've done that.
Everything has been so difficult with COVID for all sports. What's been the biggest impact for your program?
You know, it's just been a little bit of an adjustment. I think we have a close team, closely knit team. We don't have many players. We have 9, and they're used to being together a lot, and they're close and spend a lot of time together. So when you take a group like that and all of a sudden you're, hey, try not to be in groups of more than, you know, 2 at a time, and making those kind of changes to their everyday life, I think it's been hard for them because they are so close and their relationships are tight. So that's been different. And then going back to our fall, I'm sure you know we were limited a bit in terms of competition and only played 3 events, and it was, you know, SEC only competition, which was fantastic, but the volume wasn't as much there, and so that was a bit different. Usually we go kind of mid-September to really the first week of November, and so that was abbreviated, and then having that long break from Thanksgiving till they came back in January was a challenge. And I think they did the best they could being home, and, you know, those of them that could worked with coaches and played a lot. And we had 2 teammates that were together over the break, so they trained and played a lot together. But that's been just sort of an adjustment coming back, being a group together, and really we got to playing pretty quickly. They were only here for about a week before Western Kentucky came down to play. So it's just, tennis is sort of always like that. We just hit the ground running in January, and then you kind of don't look back, and next thing you know, it's almost June. So we'll be ready for it.
Christina Ruska and Emma Kurtz are 5th-year players, and they've been so good. How does that experience help you?
They have, and to your point, we're really kind of young. Like, those 2 are older and have a ton of experience. They've shown great leadership this year. Really happy to have both of them back, and I think they're making the most of that opportunity. And our team is, you know, really, we have 5 either freshmen or sophomores, and the sophomores had a shortened season last year. So having the experience of Chris and Emma, who have been around now for their 5th year, and been on some very experienced, successful teams, I think really helps the younger players, and they admire and look up to them, and they're doing a great job being leaders.
Our guest is Vanderbilt women's tennis coach Leaky Sabanos. When you have so many good players, how difficult is it to place them in, you know, to the rankings and pairings for these tournaments?
Yeah, it's a challenge. It's a challenge on any team when you have good players, which we do, and really my goal here at the start is to get them all opportunities. So in every match we've played, we've had everybody contribute in either singles or in doubles. And obviously the younger ones, I'm trying to get a lot of good match play. Chris has been coming back off of an injury, and she's going to get a lot of matches just to kind of catch up. But you give everyone opportunities, and that's the challenge of having a really good team, is you've got really good players, and you know, you can play 6 singles matches and 3 doubles matches, but if there's a way everybody can contribute to a team win, that's a really good recipe to have, and that's what we'll try to do. And there may be matchups where kind of down the road, just in terms of who's playing who, there might be somebody that's a better matchup against a certain opponent, and we'll roll with that player one day. And the other thing we do a lot, Kevin, is just try to experiment with different doubles teams, because it's sometimes hard to know what will click. And you have teams that look great for a while, and then they might get a little stale, and you're ready to change things up if you need to. So that's something I've talked to the team about early this year, is, hey, be ready to play with kind of anybody. and that could change from match to match, and they've responded to that really well.
I've always thought that winning brings more winning in college sports. How did you see the national championship and those SEC titles attract even more good players to your program?
Yeah, certainly. I think having success and you know, showing that you can play at the highest level, especially in our conference, which is just as tough as it could be. I mean, that can be a draw. And I think we've historically done a really good job of developing players and maybe not always getting the top of the top in terms of signees, but we get kids that really want to play. They want to learn. They're passionate about tennis. And if you have all those things, we're ready to do the work. And our kids that have done that have really shown some great improvement. And I think that's a draw. I mean, of course, Vanderbilt sells itself, and Nashville is an amazing city. And when you get to play in the SEC and you have that kind of competition, it's sort of it's a win-win. And I certainly think it's helped us to have that success, and we'd like to continue that going forward.
You're so familiar with this program. How's the transition been to head coach, you know, especially with Coach McDonald still around? I got to assume it's gone pretty smoothly for you.
It's gone really smoothly, honestly. I mean, COVID has kind of made it a very different year, but
sure.
I mean, Jeff and I have known each other for 20 years. He's known me since I was 17, almost 18, and it's just been a really easy transition. And it's funny because he jokes with me, and now he calls me boss, and it kind of, I feel embarrassed sometimes. He's really kind of let me take the reins, and kind of we've been doing that for the last couple of years, so it doesn't feel drastically different, but I think we know each other so well, and we respect each other really well, and we have a good coaching relationship, and he's a friend, and I think we work well together, and we complement one another, and it's been easy. He's made it easy for me, and we have, as I said, we have a great team, and they're ready to work, so as long as they're willing to do that, and Jeff and I are here, and we have a great volunteer assistant in Chase Colton, who is the brother of one of our players that was on that national championship team, Courtney Colton, and him being here and helping with the team has been awesome. So excited about what's to come.
One more for you before we let you go. You've been part of the Vanderbilt Athletics Hall of Fame for a few years now. How special has it been to be part of that group?
That's really special. I mean, I think about it and I go, should I have been in there? I mean, was it too early?
Of course.
But I mean, there are some pretty incredible people that have been honored, and to be amongst that group is just, it's really, really special. And I know there are so many Commodores, especially Commodore tennis players, that deserve to be in that group. And I know their time will come, but it's a wonderful honor and one that I'm very grateful for to Vanderbilt.
Aliki, thanks so much for the time. Keep up the good work. Congrats on the good start to the season.
Thanks, Kevin. Talk to you soon.
All right. Have a good night.
You too.
All right. That's Vanderbilt women's tennis coach Aliki Sabanos. Their team off to a 3-0 start, including victories over the weekend against Middle Tennessee and then yesterday against Memphis. Coming up in a moment, our final guest of the night, Vanderbilt basketball alum and two-time All-SEC selection Ronnie McMahon. We'll catch up with Ronnie coming up next. This is Commodore Hour, and this is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Welcome back to Commodore Hour on this Monday night in Nashville from the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. I'm Kevin Ingram. Our final guest of the night was a terrific basketball player at Vanderbilt back in the 90s. He was a two-time All-SEC selection. He's the fifth leading scorer in Vanderbilt history, 1,719 points from 1991 through 95, averaged 18 a game as a senior. Had the third most three-pointers in Vanderbilt history with 296. Also seventh in career steals at Vanderbilt with 157. Ronnie McMahon joins me now. Ronnie, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Happy to be here. How are y'all?
Doing fine. Now, you had the green light back in the day, 296 of 774. That's putting up some shots.
I had good teammates that were able to find me opportunities to put some shots up, and so I was able to make a couple, I guess.
You made a whole bunch of them back in the day. I remember that Sweet 16 team in 93. You guys went 28-6 and 14-2, won the SEC East. You still keep up with those guys?
Because I now coach at Montgomery Bell Academy with Kevin Anglin, who was also one of our senior captains on that team. I have been able to also through Facebook keep up with a number of guys, Frank Secker, Malik Evans, Chris Woods, Chris Lawson, Dan Hall. We're all friends on Facebook. Bruce Elder comes in town and spends some time with Kevin as well, with Willie Donick. And so, yeah, as much as we all can when our kids or our other responsibility do not get in the way. But, yeah, we try to keep up with each other at least, you know, yearly.
What was most special about playing with that group and playing for Eddie Fogler back then?
We all got along so well was one of the big things that I noticed both on and off the court. We all wanted to win. We all were willing to make sacrifices, whether it was individually or collectively. We just wanted to do whatever Coach Fogler tried to get us to do, and we all bought in. There was no egos involved. There was no me before the team. We were all skilled. We were all good at different things, and so we were just able to blend our talents together with a strong mindset that whatever it takes for us to win, we were willing to do it.
What do you remember about the Sweet 16 run?
I remember we were able to go out to Utah. We were able to get some retribution on an Illinois team, really good Illinois team that we had faced at the Great Alaska Shootout, which they beat us up physically out at the Great Alaska Shootout, beat us in the championship. And I remember that vividly, like the second game that we took it to them. We didn't back down. It was back and forth, and towards the end of the game, we were able to pull that out. And then going to Washington for the Sweet 16, playing against Temple. Michigan was also on the same side as us, and watching them, you know, practice before us and have an opportunity to be on the biggest stage and to play as well as we did to give ourselves a chance to win that game and get so close, but yet not being able to come up with the victory, but just having an opportunity to get there and earning the respect of other teams that have nationally been ranked with so many big names and big Chris Webber, Aaron McKee, Eddie Jones for Temple, Rick Brunson for Temple, the Fab Five, of course. I mean, it was just something to behold. Like, look, we're here on the biggest stage, and we're having our chance to show that we can play, and we had a good team, and just unfortunately we weren't able to pull it out.
That was played at the old King Dome, right? Was that place like just playing in a big cave?
Absolutely. I mean, it was humongous. I remember just walking in and looking up, and it was so cavernous and just so much space, and yet we shot the ball well in there. Obviously, they shot a little better than we did because they came up with the victory. But I remember being there thinking, like, all right, we're here now. Let's just go play. And we did. And just, you know, it was unfortunate that we weren't able to come up with a victory.
Our guest is two-time All-SEC selection Ronnie McMahon joining us here on Commodore Hour. The SEC was really good when you played. I know Kentucky and Arkansas and Florida all had Final Four teams. You had Shaq and Allen Houston and Latrell Sprewell and a bunch of other great players in the league back then. Which of those guys was the toughest to deal with that you found?
It didn't matter. Every single one was, Mashburn at Kentucky, because of his size and his skill set, was so much, whether it was inside or outside. He could handle, he could post, he was physical, he had finesse ability, he had the ability to shoot the ball from outside. At Arkansas, Lee Mayberry, Todd Day, at Florida, Dan Cross, Craig Brown, at Tennessee, Allen Houston, at South Carolina, a guy by the name of Jamie Watson. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it was just, the list goes on and on. Every time we stepped on the floor at an arena against an opponent, you know, we were playing against NBA players, future NBA players, and other players that were also good in their own right, all SEC guys. I mean, Shaq at LSU, at Ole Miss, Eric Dampier, Darrell Wilson. So every night you walk into the gym, like, you got your hands full. At Auburn, Wesley Person, yep. Ronnie Battle, Aaron Swenson. So every night you step on the floor, you knew, like, all right, today's another day. Like, I got to lace them up and be ready, because, I mean, you're stepping into a fire, and you better be ready to respond.
When you look at the SEC now, and it's really good now, top to bottom, how do you sort of compare it now with back when you played?
The game itself is different. It's more ball dominant as far as using the dribble and using pick and rolls, as opposed to the game back when I came through. When I came through, there was if you had guys on the block that could score, you found ways to get them shots on the block. A lot of teams set a lot of down screens. It was more screening action throughout the league as opposed to being a ball-dominant league where everyone's using the dribble to penetrate, to break people down, or using handoffs, dribble drive action, or pick and roll action. And so the difference in the game now, you have 1 through 4 because it's more positionless basketball that guys handle and try to create, except when we came through, you know, it was a defined position. The point guard really was the primary ball handler. 2 guard was really the shooting guard. Small forward was the small forward to be able to do, whether it was create off the dribble, slash the basket, or if he was another wing stretch guy. Your power forward was a guy that also contributed on the block. And then, of course, you had a center. And so the positions were more defined when we played in the 90s as opposed to now.
Ronnie McMahon's our guest. Vanderbilt, great from back in the 90s. As far as this year's team, how can they turn it around and win a few SEC games here as we get into the second month of conference play?
I think they, attitude-wise, I know they want to win. I think, you know, they've got to get 5 guys on the floor and some guys contributing off the bench that all are fighting for the same goal, taking care of the basketball, trusting one another, not making some similar mistakes that may have hurt them in the previous game. Get some confidence in knocking shots down from the outside on the perimeter and not just one or two people. I think as a unit, they've got to have, you know, 3 or 4 guys being able to knock some shots down and trust one another. You know, it's just that every time they get close, it feels like, you know, they run into a buzzsaw, they turn it over at an inopportune time or miss a box out or can't come up with a big free throw that they need. And so they need a little bit of luck, but I think they need to fight together and find a way somehow to win. And I know they're working on it. That's what they want. It's just they got to get some luck so it happens that way for them.
Ronnie, to finish up, you mentioned earlier coaching at NBA. How are things going for you?
Well, with COVID being our biggest factor that we've got to deal with, we've played 10 games. We're 10-0. We have one of our best teams we've had in a number of years. We have some depth. We have skill. We have good leadership, but the pandemic is the pandemic. And so being able to try to navigate through these crazy times and being able to continue and give our team an opportunity to play, that's all we can hope for and try to work for. And that's what we're doing. I enjoy it so much, but you don't know what the next day is going to bring. Like, who's going to test positive today or yeah. What other team has some positives or they had to cancel and change games. So it is every single day you're just hoping, like, all right, let's just prepare and see if we're able to push through it.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Is did you just wake up in the morning and say, man, I wonder what's going to happen today?
I walk on campus and go straight to the nurse's office and I look at her and say, okay, how are we today? Because every single day I don't know. I don't know what's happened in the afternoon. I don't know who's walked in and said, well, I woke up last night with a sore throat and congestion. I have no idea. I myself was out with COVID for 2 weeks. Coach Anglin right now is out with COVID. At the beginning of the year, we had some players out with it. And so we've all been navigating and working through it to try to get through the season. And so, like, every single day is we don't know. You just hands in the air, walk in, pray, fingers crossed. All right, what are we looking at today? Okay, today's a good day. Let's go.
Did you guys all know that Willie Donick was going to be an NHL hockey announcer when you were playing at Vanderbilt back in the day?
Absolutely not. I knew that Willie was very efficient and very smart at a number of things, knowledge from all types of sports, different things, but a NHL hockey sportscaster, I did not see that.
He does a great job at it.
Absolutely.
Ronnie, thank you so much for the time. Really enjoyed speaking with you and I loved watching you play back in the day. And hey, have a good night. We appreciate it.
Kevin, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And you do the same.
All right. As Vanderbilt alum, basketball alum, 2-time All-ICC selection, Ronnie McMahon, 1,700-point scorer between 1991 and 95, and the third most three-pointers in Commodore history of just short of 300, hit 296. We'll come back, some final notes, and finish up the hour, Commodore Hour. This is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Welcome back to Commodore Hour. About to wrap things up. We appreciate our producer, Steve Goldberg, taking great care of us. Max Herz as well here at the game studios. A few notes. Congrats to Vanderbilt soccer goalkeeper and football kicker Sarah Fuller, who is part of Wednesday's presidential inauguration festivities over in D.C., recorded an announcement to introduce Vice President Harris. It was cool to see her get that opportunity. I like the behind-the-scenes photos of her recording that message over at Vanderbilt Stadium. Some NBA updates. Saben Lee has played four games, though. Was in 12 minutes for Detroit against Philly on Saturday. 2 points and four assists. Last night, Aaron Nesmith with the Boston Celtics. His first double-figure game, 11 points and six rebounds. 3 of 5 from three as the Celtics beat Cleveland 141-103. On the other side was Darius Garland. He had 4 points, 2 rebounds, and 5 assists in 23 minutes. Had 11 points in 22 minutes in a win against Brooklyn back on Friday. And golf, former Vanderbilt players, four of them, the American Express Tournament out in California. Luke List finished tied for 21st. Will Gordon tied for 64th. Also had John Augenstein making his pro debut, and Grant Snedeker part of the field as well. We will say so long for now. Hope everybody has a great night. Basketball on Wednesday, Vanderbilt in Florida, 5:30 tip. This is Commodore Hour. This is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College.
Thanks for listening to tonight's edition of Commodore Hour. Tonight's show was brought to you by Ascend Federal Credit Union, the exclusive credit union of Vanderbilt Athletics. Regions, get the Vanderbilt University Visa check card from Regions. Visit regions.com/anchor down to order yours today. And by the Middle Tennessee Ford Dealers. The preceding was a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Vanderbilt Sports Network.